This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt and Patrick here today. Patrick, we, of course, got friend of the show. We haven't had Aaron Clems on our show in a while. He used to be on it back when in the mornings. He's going to join us. He's, the chief strategy officer for Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. He's been fighting the PolyMet mine, and we're going to find out the latest there. There is a hoot of an argument they're trying to make. You should shoot mine for nickel. We'll explain that with him. That comes up a little bit later on this hour. Hopefully, fingers are crossed for Sven Sundgaard from Bring Me the News to join us coming up here a little bit later on to talk about the weather here, because I want to talk to him about South Carolina weather, because that is weird weather right on the coast. We'll get there in a second. But do you feel that, Patrick? Do you feel that in the air?
I feel it in the air.
It is not World Series fever. We're Twins fans. No! It is pumpkin spice season. Starting earlier than ever when it's 90-some degrees. Ugh. Are you a fan of the pumpkin spice?
I won't say no, but I'm not going to go get it by myself probably either.
Well, sometimes they think too hard. And I've seen pumpkin spice cookies and stuff like that. And that's then okay. It makes sense. A pumpkin cookie. I mean, have you ever been to a church social and they'll have I just made some pumpkin cookies, and it's like, pumpkin, where did you even find a pumpkin? It's March. I had one in the root cellar. It was ready to go. All right, thanks, Agnes. No, I mean, some of it makes sense. Sometimes it doesn't. Our brand new product this year. Patrick, are you ready? Well, you're a producer at a radio station. For God's sakes, you're probably eating this already. Get ready for pumpkin spice flavored. All right, so I got the latest here on Carnahan. This is from Broadcorp here. I've heard from, can I just sort of say, this is just, wow. I've heard from a few sources that the range of severance options discussed for Minnesota GOP Chair Carnahan was around 10 months of salary and benefits. Sources indicated the situation was fluid and subject to changes. Why are you guys paying her anything? Why are you guys paying her anything? The Star Tribune, for God's sakes. Not exactly the most liberal rag out there. I know you guys was the Road Star. God, you guys, I get it. You shame the Star Tribune into becoming a conservative paper. I get it. That was what, because you couldn't stand the truth being reported on the right. I get that. But this newspaper is nowhere near a liberal rag, for God's sakes. And even they are saying, this is from the Star Tribune from less than an hour ago. Jennifer Carnahan wants you to remember the real victim here. Jennifer Carnahan. Dear Lord. But this is the breaking news. This is only 2 minutes ago. In the last 90 minutes, Minnesota GOP Jennifer Carnahan was served notice of an emergency Minnesota GOP State Central Committee meeting on August 30th at the Sovereign Estate Winery in Waconia. Hey, good publicity if you can get it. If Carnahan resigns tonight, the meeting will be delayed 45 days. Stay tuned for updates. I don't know if she's going to make it to the meeting. Will she make it to the meeting? If she resigns tonight. Okay, resign. The problem is, if she does resign, it's kind of one of those things where she's going to, that would be, taking kind of blame. And I don't think that's really something she wants to do at this point. Okay, let me see if I can find, where is Channel 9, Theo Keith? Let's see what he has to say. He's been pretty good on this stuff. He only has that update from 4 hours ago. So, yeah, Broadcorp is the latest one. He's got the latest update on this. So, once again, let me read that to you again here from Michael Broadcorp. In the last 90 minutes, Minnesota GOP chair was served notice of an emergency Minnesota GOP State Central Committee meeting on August 30th at Sovereign Estate Winery in Waconia. God, does that sound white. It does. He does. You know, I'm just saying, yeah. If Carnahan resigns tonight, the meeting will be delayed 45 days. Stay tuned for updates. We'll have to find out about that. There you go. 952-946-6205. One last story for you today involves Joe Biden received a letter from Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan on Monday. Minnesota stands ready to welcome refugee families from Afghanistan. You may already be aware that in the past, Minnesota stepped forward to help those who are fleeing desperate situations and need a safe place to call home, the letter reads. New Minnesotans strengthen our community and contribute to the social fabric of our state. They are our neighbors. Afghans are fleeing their home country and seeking refuge after a governmental collapse and Taliban takeover of the country weeks before the United States planned its withdrawal of troops. And by the way, if you hadn't heard the Stein interview, Stein and I think we pegged it. The problem was our intelligence agencies were only looking at the Taliban. They weren't looking at what we should have been looking at, the resiliency of the Afghan military. Now, granted, once again, I'll be the first to say, Trump himself, when he decided to negotiate directly with the Taliban. Think about that. Donald Trump, the president of the United States, was negotiating with the Taliban without the government of Afghanistan present, and then went and told them not only here's what we're going to do, but then ordered the government of Afghanistan to release thousands of Taliban prisoners, many of whom are attacking us right now. Well done, idiot. Wow. But the reality is that it became clear, and as we said on the show, 2,448 Americans died in Afghanistan over the last 20 years. We've sacrificed enough. And if the local people are not willing to try to sacrifice for what they believe in, well, should we be there anymore? I don't think we should. But the one thing I'm glad about here is there have been, for the last 20 years, plenty of Afghanis who have been there helping us. And we're not talking about, okay, they worked in some fort for 3 weeks. No, we have people that have worked with the United States government for a decade plus and will be killed. They will be killed by the Taliban if they are left behind. Taliban, you shouldn't trust the Taliban. I have no idea why Trump ever did. That was one of the dumbest things he could have ever done. But he did. He trusted them. You should never trust the Taliban. So here's the deal. Bring them here. If they are willing to work with us, they are willing to help push the American cause, then for God's sakes, bring them to Minnesota. Let's streamline the process. Let's get the paperwork done. I live in a city that's robust and vibrant. I live in a city that not only has its traditional Scandinavian kind of feel, but as well as is made better by the stories and cultures of so many people, including the Native Americans who were here before us, the Hmong, the Somali, the Latino, the African American. It's a vibrant state. And trust me, can I just make this plea? Bring them on in here, because in 10 years we'll have some of those, we'll have great Afghan restaurants in town. And, you know, I love that part of it. They come here, they're part of the community. Yes! That's America. That's America. And I love it. I love this town. And this town will be made better by people like interpreters who have been working, knowing the Taliban took over, that they would be killed. Working because they believed in what America stood for, at least in Afghanistan. Well, let's show them that they weren't wrong and bring them here. Bring them and their families here and make this country better by making it more inclusive. That's a good thing. And if you hear what I said and you feel threatened, go away. Just seriously, go away. Seriously, just go away. Native Roots Radio, that's coming up next. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya. I am not joking when I say I pray you guys leave her in power tonight. If she decides, if what Theo Keith is reporting, that there is no validity to that, that this is really, she's really going to go, you know, 100% in or out, and she is somehow retained as the executive director of the Minnesota GOP, all it will take is the next shoe to drop, and you'll realize how much of a mess you have on your hands. And I don't know. This story just gets wilder and wilder. There's someone that was posted about this is like the drummers from Spinal Tap who spontaneously combust on a regular basis. That's about the only thing you could add that would make this thing even weirder at this point. You've got a real big problem here, and also, if I may be blunt, the people who are clearly against Carnahan right now are your moderate Republicans and the extreme fringe of the Republican Party. As a matter of fact, I saw Mortensen has called for her to resign. Jensen has called for her to resign. And then the rest of them are like, oh, God, no. You can't be doing this and stay in power. And I get it. The Republicans, and we had Representative Davids make the comment, it's like the Democrats and Republicans, act differently when it comes to, crises, comes to, behavior issues within their individual parties. And Davids was like, we can't treat her like we treated Al Franken. Well, you could. That would be consistency. And the reality is where we're at with Jennifer Carnahan right now, although there was allegations against Franken, you got a lot of stuff going on right now. I mean, what was you had a case where the story this morning, and yeah, let's go over that really quick. The one that broke overnight that was kind of giving me, a little bit there, was the former, this is the former Andy Aplikowski, former executive officer for the GOP, wrote a letter. And in this letter, basically, if the allegations against Carnahan are true, she knew well before August of the charges against Anton Lazaro that, of that were going to be handed down. She knew well before that. The note from Aplikowski really implies she knew exactly what he was busted for. It implies that. And if that's the case, then comes the huge question. How do you sit, if you know exactly what this guy was busted for, how do you not go to the GOP, and not in public, but in closed quarters, and calling up anyone? Did you get any money from this guy? You need to donate it now. You need to donate it now. I can't tell you why, but just get rid of that money fast. It sounds like, Lazaro was bankrolling her personal campaign. Now, it should be noted that when you run for the executive director of like one of the political parties, there is no spending limits on stuff like that. So it's not necessarily like there's violations of law she did, but she clearly had a benefactor. It sounds like, at least from these allegations from Aplikowski, it sounds like from the implications from him that he was, this was kind of, the sugar daddy for her campaigns. And then the implication that there was also financial mismanagement, which takes this well beyond just an internal audit by the Minnesota GOP, that there actually has to be a state investigation into the Minnesota GOP on how they were managing and wrangling their finances, because it sounds like they were up to no good there and doing some things that were against the law. If, once again, I want to be very clear, if these accusations that Aplikowski is putting forward, but once again, if I was Jennifer Carnahan and I had these people putting out there and I had any evidence that backed up my claims, I would have it. I would be, Jennifer today could host a news conference. Every major news outlet would show up and she could show her evidence. And yet I don't see that happening. And once again, now we have a story out from Theo Keefe that says she might be negotiating an exit package. Republicans, I know you don't think I would ever try to help you. But the reality is that I'll be blunt. I hope you are stupid enough to keep her in place. I hope you're stupid enough to keep her in place, because even if you don't get rid of her, if you do get rid of her, even if you do get rid of her, you have got a financial audit you're going to have to do. You're going to have a purging of staff you're going to have to do that either were aware of the Lazaro issues or were just so loyal to Carnahan that basically you can't trust them per se. You're going to have the financial audit of donations. That's going to clearly be a major problem. And then on top of that, you've got to hope not any more shoes drop, because you've got potentials of lawsuits here, not only from former staffers, but obviously as accusations fly here. you could have former executive officers making lawsuits. I mean, this is really kind of some bizarre stuff. And that's the good scenario. The bad scenario is you keep her in power. And people like Gazelka and Kurt Dowd basically like, oh, well, what are you supposed to do? She's in power. And then on Saturday, we find out, oh, well, blank happened. And blank could be anything. It could be a minor problem. But considering the story, I'm not going to bank on it. God forbid, what happens if you find out? And once again, this is just pure speculation at this point. What happens if you find out she was more involved with the Lazaro stuff than we initially knew? I found it very interesting. Lazaro's lawyer, the first thing he said to the public was, Cardahan's not under investigation for this. I don't, really? I didn't think she was. I don't know why you would say, you would insist that that's your first statement again for your client, but okay. And like I said, I don't know what in the case is going to happen. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you got to wonder where things are going to go. I mean, these shoes that keep dropping, they're fairly substantial. And then think of the mess you've got. Then think of the mess. One thing is very clear. No matter what happens, there are two very different political parties here. And I've had my share of people saying Democrats are too quick to pull the trigger when someone makes an accusation, someone. You know what? My mentality is this. If you've got a lot of accusations against you, then and you say you're innocent and you know you're innocent, then go get that cleaned up. And no one's going to criticize you when you come back and say, you know what? I was proven innocent. I didn't do anything wrong. I want to rerun for my seat again. And no one, you know, I don't think if people are upset about that, then they shouldn't be. And if people in the DFL, if you've proven yourself innocent, start trying to bring that up again, I'll be the first one to smack on them saying, no, he proved themselves, you know, innocent in that case. Republicans are a very different breed. And not only did Davids give up the ghost when he said that basically we're not going to treat her like we treated Al Franken. That's what the Democrats do. They hold people accountable. We don't do that. The reality is it's the party of selfishness and greed. And Republicans today are the politicians that are there. The people that are in this power are just they're people that have looked at politics as a way to get into lobbying, corporate executive boards, whatever the case may be. It's a stepping stone to more money later on down the road. And they really could care less about the politics or the party or anything. It's about themselves. And if we've seen any is that you can't trust anyone in this party, frankly, anymore in the GOP, to be in it for anyone but themselves. So, you know, whatever happens tonight in regards to the Minnesota GOP and the vote on Carnahan, you know, it's good news for me. I'm going to have plenty of fodder to go with for the next month. But the reality is it's your party, and it's already going to be a nightmare state fair for you guys. Can you imagine what some of the video footage of state fair is going to be like? Holy cow. But the reality is that you guys have made your own bed, because when you started creating selfishness and greed as virtues, that's when all of a sudden your entire party went off the rails. So good luck. I've already kind of advised you. You may want to think I'm wrong, but I guarantee you I'm not. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll update it there, see if there's any more updates. And once again, accusations are accusations. I'm just making, like I said, I mean, people can report the stuff. I'm just reading off tweets and this and putting out hypothetical situations on what could possibly happen. I don't know what really happened. I don't know if we'll ever know what really happened. All I can know is this, is that I know damaged goods when I see it. Good luck. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Nasty bass. Mm. It's gonna be kind of right tonight. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thanks to Todd Golich for sponsoring AM 950 this week. Thank you very much, sir. You can sponsor the radio station as well. It's not just a membership, but this is a sponsorship. And Todd, of course, he used to live here in Minnesota. He lives in Spain, supports the station, listens to us all the time. Thank you very much, Todd. We appreciate that. As we know, we are just part of your dial choice in Spain. But, man, the food over there, delicious. Oh, you're the lucky duck, dude. That is a fun place to visit. Anywho. He does sponsor the station. We're very grateful. And if you'd like to sponsor the station too, 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. Of course, his band is just folk. They've got the song Is It Monday out. I put the link up on social media. I'll put it back up again tomorrow. Go click on it. Watch it. It's good music there. And thank you very much. Once again, if you'd like to sponsor the station, 952-946-8885. 952-946-8885 is the phone number. That's the way to go there. Hey, I wanted to bring up something. You know, one of the things that I have noticed in regards to this summer, and I think that part of the problem is the news media in this town has been so focused on the what's been going on with the black community in North Minneapolis and reporting every shooting and all of this, every carjacking, and splashing it across the top of the fold, above the page, at the top of the page, and running with it as the lead story, and that's been the case. The reality is there has been a shocking amount of drownings in the state, motorcycle accidents, and ATV accidents. And I would love to be able to say, in the case of the motorcycles, and I say this at the beginning of every motorcycle season, hey, guys, be careful out there. We're not used to motorcycles. Give them plenty of room. And I always look and I try my best to give motorcycle riders as much room as they need. That's the safe thing. It would be easy if I could just say, well, you know, people are just not paying attention on the road and be careful out there, watch for motorcycles. There's a lot of motorcyclists that are just doing dumb things and like going around on the right side and trying to take a left turn and then running straight into it. Oh, my God, there was that accident I saw. The ATVs, I mean, ATVs, I don't ride ATVs. I mean, I know a lot of people that do. I mean, there are just too many cases. And maybe it was because when I was a kid, I grew up for 2 years. I was in Georgia. And this was right when the three-wheelers came out. And I don't know if you remember those. Those were the most dangerous things. They had big, puffy wheels, and they'd roll over so easily. They had so many kids getting killed on those things. Because they'd roll over and they'd crush them right away. Or they'd break their neck because they got thrown. And so I kind of had a negative feeling about ATVs from the get-go. But I don't ride them that much. I don't know. You know, it's kind of one of those things where can I just take a truck over there and load up the truck and then haul the truck back? You know, that sort of thing. I'm not looking to do small loads. It's kind of like if I'm cutting down a tree or cutting wood or something like that, I'll just move the pickup truck down there, and that's going to be easier actually for me in the long run. I don't have to make as many trips. But there are a lot of people that like to zip around on the roads, and if you go into northern Minnesota by any major roadway, there's an ATV path that's been cleared out there because that's a common way for people to go. Usually the same path that the snowmobiles go in the winter. And once again, it'd be easy for me to say, well, ATV drivers, you need to drive safer, or people, keep an eye out for ATV drivers. It's not, there's no real rhyme or reason for this. It just seems like there's a lot of ATV accidents that are leading to deaths. Authorities say a couple severely injured on their ATV was struck by a pickup truck earlier this month have died within 24 hours of each other. The St. Croix County Sheriff's Office said that Kawasa ATV was in a collision with a 2020 Dodge Ram just before 4:30 in Springfield, Wisconsin. Severely injured in the crash were John, 57, and Pamela Jarvis, 58, of Glenwood City, Wisconsin, who were on their ATV, were taken to Regents Hospital for treatment. St. Croix County Sheriff's Office has been confirmed that John Jarvis died from his injuries on Sunday. Pamela Jarvis died on Monday. The pickup driver, 29-year-old from Menominee, was treated at the scene. She was wearing a seatbelt. According to the Baldwin Bulletin, John and Pamela Jarvis's two daughters recently graduated Baldwin Woodville High Schools in Wisconsin. I feel like this is underreported. I don't know why there are so many drowning deaths. I don't know why there's so many motorcycle deaths. I don't know why there's so many ATV deaths out of the metro area, but they have been. And there have been drownings, of course, and motorcycle deaths and ATV deaths in the metro as well. Be careful out there. It just seems like this year is a really, really, really bad year. So please, motorcycle drivers, please be careful. People on the road, keep an eye out for motorcycle riders. If you're on the road, keep an eye out for the ATV drivers. ATV drivers, don't try to beat traffic. That car's going 60 miles an hour. Your ATV is not going to go that fast. And be careful if you're swimming, okay? And if you're not the strongest swimmer or the conditions are turning a little rough, well, maybe be careful out there, okay? Just, I'm going to go back to what I've been saying with coronavirus. I don't want you dead. I don't want you dead. So, please, it seems like there's just a lot of stories that are coming across. I wanted to mention that because as much as we're focused on Minneapolis every time there's a carjacking, the reality is that this is something that I think we can prevent with just a few safety measures. Hopefully. 952-946-6205. Aaron Clems from the Minnesota Center for the Environmental Advocacy joins us. When we do return, we're going to talk about PolyMet. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We're keeping an eye out. It's Carnahan Watch 2021. I have not seen anything yet, any kind of new on this. But like I said, it could be kind of happening at any point here. We'll keep an eye on that. 952-946-6205. Got Aaron here. Chief Strategy Officer Aaron Clems is joining us. Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. They've been fighting against the PolyMet mine, and they should be, for goodness sakes. Aaron, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today, my friend.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks for coming back. My God, how many years has it been, dude?
It has been a while. I do miss the AM 950 studio.
Well, you're more than welcome to come back anytime, for sure. We just had the Native Roots Radio guys that are on after me. We're just up at the Line 3 concert yesterday. We've seen the disastrous decision here. They're digging the Line 3 line. They're not pumping oil through it, but they've already leaked like crazy all over it. They've made a major environmental damage. They haven't even come close to their hiring numbers that they promised, and a lot of those have been undercut, and a lot of the people they're bringing in are, you know, causing crimes in Bemidji and areas like this. It is a disaster. We already know as well the PolyMet mine, the type of mining they've been out there, it's never been done environmentally safe. So to even dance this dance is dangerous. You guys over there at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy have been out there fighting this from the get-go. Let's talk a little bit. How has the fight been going against PolyMet? We know that a lot of the permits got yanked.
Yeah, no, all four of the major permits for the PolyMet mine proposal that they would need to operate. So this is the permit to mine, their water pollution permit, their air pollution permit, and their wetlands destruction permit are all either reversed, remanded back to the agencies, or suspended. And so that's really good news in that all of these permits, which were hastily issued just before the 2018 election, have been reviewed by the courts and in almost every case found wanting and sent back to the agency. This is both a good thing in the sense that it stopped this destructive proposal, but it's also a really sobering moment, I think, for us to think about what our agencies and our regulators are doing. The fact that every major permit that they've looked at in the courts has been sent back should tell us a lot about the quality of that work and the fact that these permits don't meet the law and they don't protect Minnesota. And so we're at a critical moment, really, where for the first time, Governor Walz has the ball back in his court. All of these permits were issued in the previous administration under Governor Dayton. And so right now, it's up to Governor Walz to decide how he's going to move forward. And so we're really trying to push him to make better decisions about how to protect the water downstream.
The permits were always, and you talk about when they pushed all those through in 2018, that was something that was common. They were trying to get those through before the Democrats took charge because they wanted to push this not just here, but in Alaska and other places as well. With the faults here, remind everyone out there on these permits, what were the faults that the courts found that said, no, these aren't going to fly?
Sure. So the permit to mine, which is the main permit for Minnesota mining operations, was reversed by the Minnesota Supreme Court because it was a forever permit with no end to it. And the law says you have to have a term. You have to have an end point. Under Minnesota law, that end point is when the mine has been reclaimed and land that was once a mine can be returned to use in some other fashion. There is no end point for this PolyMet mine or other sulfide mines like it, like the Twin Metals mine, coming back into the public use. And the reason why is because it creates water pollution that lasts for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yes, it
right?
does.
So the Supreme Court struck it down because they said, look, you can't have a permit that has, it is not a forever permit for pollution. You have to have an endpoint, and they have yet to prove when that would actually happen.
Go ahead, please continue.
I'm sorry. And then, you know, the other part of this, too, is they have this very experimental scheme that was supposedly going to prevent water pollution and come to function. And there was literally zero pieces of evidence in the record showing that it would work. It was made up. And when the court asked them in open court where the evidence was. They're like, yeah, we'll look around and we'll see if we can find some more for you. That's just unacceptable. I mean, we issued permits on the basis of assertions and no evidence. So that permit's now back at the Department of Natural Resources, and they have to decide what to do about it. And they have yet to make a decision. It's been back there for several months.
Much like the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency was defending Line 3 mysteriously, the DNR, I mean, it is a little bit surprising. The DNR, an organization that is there to protect natural resources for the state of Minnesota, they seem to be standing by these permits, though, still, as the courts have rejected them, right?
Yeah, they have. And, I mean, I think the problem for the DNR fundamentally is that they have conflicting parts of their mission. On the one hand, they're supposed to protect Minnesotans from natural resource damage, to protect our natural resources, our water, our air, and our land. But they're also responsible for promoting mineral development according to Minnesota law. And so they end up caught between these two aspects of their mission quite frequently. And it creates bad outcomes for people. We shouldn't have an agency that's supposed to protect our land and water also having an eye on developing a particular industry in Minnesota. Also, the other problem with the DNR has been not so much that the agency itself, but the legal advice they've gotten. I mean, Minnesotans expected our attorney general, in this case, Keith Ellison, would be the person defending Minnesotans in court to uphold the law and also make sure that our agencies are doing their job. In this case, instead of having our attorney general support the legal parts of these cases, when we go to court, we're coming up against attorneys that are hired from the industry, and Minnesota taxpayers are paying for that. So far, almost $10 million has been paid to out-of-state mining industry law firms to uphold these permits. And they're getting bad legal advice, and they're losing in court because of it.
So just remind everyone of this, because these are little nuggets that we don't hear about too much in the mainstream news. State taxpayers are on the line here for $10 million for corporate lawyers for PolyMet because apparently Keith Ellison's office is not, you know, his job would be to defend this, in which he can turn down that right to do so. But the taxpayers on the line for these law firms?
Well, to be clear, the decision to have the attorney general step aside and to look for a private law firm to do these cases was done under Lori Swanson, the previous attorney general. So this is not Keith Ellison's decision, but it has affected the fact that his attorney general's office has not been involved in these cases. But the answer is yes. $10 million so far has been appropriated by the legislature. It's gone to Holland and Hart, which is the firm that represents the agencies in court. They're a Denver-based law firm that primarily works for the mining industry. If you look at their website, go look it up. Google Holland and Hart and see who their clients are and how they talk about the mining industry. That's who they're working for, not for Minnesotans. And that's one of the things that gives us so much concern about this, is it feels like we continue to like run down this blind alley. Rather than looking up and seeing the fact that this proposal, this sulfide mine proposal, is a failure, and it's time for us to change course.
Could just one clarification, could Keith Ellison's office take that power back and can take control of this lawsuit? Or is that something that, because Swanson handed that over, that can't come back?
It's a little unclear about this. I think ultimately the agencies get to decide how they want to be represented. Right. So if the attorney general represents, you know, whether it's the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Commerce, or any other agency in court, his client is the agency. In this case, I believe the genesis of this was the Department of Natural Resources approached the attorney general and said they would like to have outside representation. I'm not sure about how durable that is. So I think that it's possible that at some point in the future that could change. But I think that decision was made sometime back in 2015. And has remained in place since then.
The Chief Strategy Officer of the MCEA is joining us. Aaron Clem's joining us, talking about PolyMet. I love the story you guys posted on your Twitter feed yesterday. And it's a good stepping stone to bring up exactly who's behind PolyMet, that this isn't a local, this is international mining behind this. They discovered these precious metals underneath Minnesota. They want them at all costs, but they're trying desperately to win over the hearts and minds of the people here. Talk a little bit about their was it the electric vehicle argument, where, hey, we're going to dig up nickel here, so that's all the electric vehicles. You guys kind of popped that bubble pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing is, I mean, MCEA is clearly, the climate crisis is real. I mean, one can go outside this summer and, you know, experience what it smells like or what it feels like you know, to have forest fire smoke constantly overhead and not realize that we're in a climate crisis. We need to make a quick transition to electric vehicles. What's really frustrating is watching the mining interests and their proponents act like they care about this stuff. And they make up stuff all the time. So, for example, on a couple of days ago, PolyMet has an email list they send to their supporters. And the first paragraph says, the White House recently singled out PolyMet as an answer for the nickel needed for the electric vehicle economy. But if you read the report that they reference, there's literally one sentence in the 250-page report about PolyMet. And all it says is that they don't have their permits. And it certainly doesn't say that that's the answer for our electric vehicle issues. You know, but it's this kind of, you know, inauthentic and really, like, cynical use of things that people care about, like the climate crisis, to try to justify themselves. I mean, the Center of the American Experiment, which is a Republican front operation, really, had a big piece just last week or 2 weeks ago saying that we need to keep the Coal Creek coal-fired power plant in North Dakota open because Twin Metals, another mine just down the road from PolyMet, will need that coal power in order to mine effectively and quick and effectively and cheaply. I mean, they're playing all sides of this argument against themselves. And I think anyone who cares about the environment needs to be really hip to this, because it's clear that folks want to use the climate crisis to justify mining. But in the end, there's no evidence that they need that those minerals to accomplish the electric vehicle transition we need. And frankly, these folks aren't even trying to make that happen. They're trying to work against it.
Let's talk about some of the other developments that have come on over the last few days. What have you been seeing here in regards to PolyMet?
Well, so PolyMet just, so well, actually, I should, this is kind of interesting. Just a couple days ago, actually yesterday, PolyMet's air permit had been struck down by the Court of Appeals. So the air pollution permit, which is issued by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, has twice been struck down by the Court of Appeals. And just yesterday, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency decided once again to appeal it to the Supreme Court for a second time. You know, that's their right. Of course, everyone has a right to appeal a decision to a higher court. We would do this. We would consider the same thing if we lost the case. What's interesting to us is for the first time, PolyMet hasn't also simultaneously asked for review of that case. And we're just curious about what that might mean. But we, you know, we think the case was well decided. We're not afraid of going to the Supreme Court to defend that win, but that's another development. And it probably means that, you know, if the Supreme Court takes that case, it'll be another year or so of litigation just on that permit alone. But at the same time, we're hopeful that we can, you know, move on from this as opposed to having an endless legal battle. It hasn't served anybody well, and it certainly hasn't caused any jobs to be developed in northern Minnesota.
Once again, this is, and by the way, this whole thing kind of explodes this idea, because one of the things, I've been up in the north, and they do try to sell this as a mom and pop sort of thing, and it's not. And what you just described of, oh, well, we'll just go to the courts for another year, it clearly is being bankrolled by international mining interests here, because they're about the only people that could afford to keep this going and hoping that the entire other rest of the system, either a political party that is compassionate to their cause eventually gets into power, or a case where they eventually just wear down the other side. But it's a standard operating procedure, and it's clearly, once again, this is not any kind of local mom and pop. I've got my candle on top of my helmet. I'm ready to go mine stuff. It's international agencies that are basically just looking at Minnesota with a carving knife and figuring out what they can get out of the state.
Well, I mean, you're right about the ownership for sure. So PolyMet is 72% owned by a company named Glencore out of Switzerland. Glencore, if you look them up, they have a terrible human rights record. They have a terrible labor record. They have a terrible environmental record. You know, they own 3/4 of the stock in this company, and they provide every single dime that this company uses to stay afloat. They haven't had any revenue because, look, it's not a mine that's operating, and they have no other operation. And so all of the money that they need to continue to operate comes from their sugar daddy corporation in Switzerland. They own 100% of this thing, if not in stock, but certainly in control of the company. The other company that's important to keep an eye on is Antofagasta, which is the owner of the Twin Metals mine just a few miles up the road in Ely, which is the other copper nickel mine that's being proposed that's moving closer to permitting. And, you know, in that case, they own 100% of it. So, there, you know, whenever you hear someone say things like, we need these metals for national security, we need these metals because we need to have domestic sources, remember, they're going to ship them overseas, and they're going to be owned by overseas corporations, right? So this is not going to be about U.S., you know, U.S. export dependence. This is all about money for multinational corporations that aren't even headquartered here. And then we'll get the pollution left behind, and they'll get the profit.
And I want to make sure everyone understands this. The second that mineral comes out of the ground, that it is no longer Minnesota's mineral, it's no longer United States mineral, it's China or Canada or Brazil's, it's someone else's mineral, and it will never come back and benefit us here directly in the United States. So anything that they're promising is a lie. It has nothing to do with this. And as Aaron just said correctly, the only thing we get is going to be the undeniable and basically inevitable pollution that comes along with these mines. That is the only thing Minnesota gets out of it. They take our product. We don't get anything back. We get to clean up the mess. And that is not a good deal. I'm no business. Well, actually, I'm a business major. That's a bad negotiation.
Well, I mean, it's even a little bit weirder than that, and even worse. The craziest part is that we're going to get the water pollution from these mines. The thing about this kind of mining is that the pollution that's created is not coming out of the smokestack. It's coming out of what's left behind, the tailings, the waste rock, and that stuff sits there on the surface and reacts with air and water, and it creates water pollution for hundreds of years. There are still Roman mines of a similar kind of geology in the UK and elsewhere, which are polluting 1,000 years after they close. So we get the water pollution. Then the copper gets formed, they create a concentrate, and they ship it overseas for that to be smelted. It gets mixed with other mines, copper concentrates, because there's a complicated process of trying to get impurities out. And so it'll probably get shipped to Indonesia or China, where it will destroy the air when it is smelted. And then we might see some of that copper shipped back to us in the form of consumer products in the future, right? But ultimately, like, we lose our water, we pay for that product to come back, and we pollute the air in other places across the globe. I mean, it's a lose-lose-lose. And there's very little win for us. The only people that win are the corporations that are pushing these projects.
We should mention as well, there's a petition out there. Where can people find this petition if they want to be out there to try to stop the PolyMet mine?
Yeah, so we have launched a website called moveonfrompolymet.com, moveonfrompolymet.com. And we have 11 organizations that have joined with us, ranging from the League of Women Voters to the Minnesota Environmental Partnership to the Isaac Walton League. And we're all working together to try to raise the awareness of this issue and to try to tell Governor Walz that he should use his authority and the money that's in the IRRB, the Iron Range Resources Board, which is designed to help communities transition away from when a mine closes, to help the folks that are, you know, in Hoyt Lakes, which is where the PolyMet mine is being considered. Ultimately, it's up to Governor Walz to decide what to do with these permits and how to move forward. Please join us at moveonfrompolymet.org and ask him to move on and try to find something better for northern Minnesota.
And if I can just add this at the end, let's just look at Line 3, the latest project that's being worked on that made a lot of promises about, oh, the oil is going to help us, it's going to be cheap oil and all these things, and billions of jobs. They made all these promises. Well, they probably didn't say billions of jobs, but they did say jobs. They haven't delivered on the jobs. The jobs they've delivered have not even gotten close to the union numbers, if I'm not mistaken. The last time I checked the numbers, those were off. And they're just digging the pipeline hole, and they are spilling and causing environmental damage like crazy. And that's the safer of the two options. You look at the mines they want to put up in the northern parts of the state, the PolyMet, the Twin Metals, those mines could potentially... Well, no, they will, because it's never been done any other way, will poison the water, air, and land for hundreds of years. So we can't have this go, and clearly we can't trust these people, because the reality is, if you want to protect the environment, you shouldn't even think about doing these mines. Move on from PolyMet.com. Is that right there, Aaron?
That's correct.
Move on from PolyMet.com. Aaron Clems. Aaron, by all means, come back, man. Don't, you know, let's make sure it's not just election nights we have you on the air.
That sounds great, Matt. I really appreciate the time.
You got Anytime. It. No problem. Aaron Clems, once again, Chief Strategy Officer for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap up the first hour. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah, those mines should not be happening. And can I just start to say, and I want to be very clear here. I'm sorry. I've just been so... poisoned, and I think that's the right term, by the Line 3 people. Well, it's going to be all these union jobs, Minnesota union jobs, hundreds of union jobs. Well, they never met the, to my knowledge, they haven't released a lot of the latest numbers. I don't think that the last numbers they released were last year, for God's sakes, which is a big red flag. I mean, I think when, if they were meeting their hiring quotas, don't you think they'd be releasing those numbers? I would imagine they would be. I haven't seen them. And once again, they have made a mess of northern Minnesota just digging the damn holes, those incompetent boobs. And why the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is not immediately saying, okay, you guys clearly shouldn't be in charge of you know, putting out spoons, let alone digging a pipeline. Why they didn't pull their minds and stop the project, I don't know. But the Environmental Protection Agency, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, rather, is not on Minnesotan sides. It's on the side of this line. And on top of it, you know, there's just this, once again, there's the promise, oh, the oil's gonna stay right here. America will be oil free. Yay. No, it's not. Not oil's gone. It's to China, probably. It is a joke. It is an absolute joke. And if you look at what they're trying to do with these other mines, you should, you know, these are corporate interests from not or anywhere near here, and they will destroy this state and leave a charred crater in its place. And they don't care because they just want the money. They just want what's in the ground. They look at us like a turkey at Thanksgiving and they just want to carve us up. And that's all they want to do. Clearly, this is something that has to be stopped. And I hope that people have the right ideas here. Move on from polymet.com. That's the website for the petition. Checking online, still haven't seen anything about Carnahan, whether or not she's trying to negotiate an exit. It's an hour and a half before that GOP executive meeting. If there's breaking news, we'll have it for you. We'll probably break it ourselves. Hour two coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. The Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Just keeping track of all this stuff. Well, first of all, yeah, nothing new from Theo Keith. I mean, like I said, I'm running through their usual suspects that have been talking about this. Broadcorp doesn't, I don't think Michael Broadcorp has anything new quite yet, on this. He's been following the story fairly well. Tori Van Oort, over at, we got to have her back on again, over at Axios Twin Cities. So Broadcorp was the one that said, as others have reported, I hear an exit package is being prepared for a possible departure by Minnesota GOP Chair Jennifer Carnahan. On that, Tori Van Oort makes the point of that sources of mine confirm the exit package is being discussed. I'm hearing at least one executive board member will not support any money for Carnahan as part of the agreement. It's a Laurel and Hardy handshake. Out the door you go. Here, what are you going to give her? Like, you know, Jimmy John's coupons or something like that? Do you like subs? Guess what? We got a stack of sub coupons for you here. Off you go. Enjoy. you fire her. Okay. And by the way, can I bring up a point here? If anything tells you the mentality of a Republican is that I need a severance package, like it's a Wall Street freaking banker who is being let go because the numbers were slightly down and the stock price went down 3 cents per share. And oh my God, they're looking to cut some heads. And I want my severance package here. You're a part of a political organization. You can stay and fight for your argument. And once again, I'm not sure if she's going to get ousted tonight. There were six people on the executive committee that have said that she should resign, but you need to have 10. And as I pointed out, she seems to have put a lot of loyal dogs around her on that executive committee. They might not have more than 7 or 8 votes. And if they don't have 10, well, she stays. And so you can stay and argue that you're innocent, or you can leave. It's up to you, but this idea that you need to give me money, I'm not going to go. Well, I don't think you guys, does the Minnesota GOP need to have that? No, I don't think they have to offer her anything. And she can threaten all day long with lawsuits, but once again, this week, in the week that we've had this story transpire, and it's been a pretty amazing week of stories, I have yet to see, I've heard of a lot of allegations. I've heard a lot of witnesses and victims coming forward to buoy those allegations. What I haven't heard is anything from the Carnahan camp saying, here's our evidence that these people are lying. Here's our evidence that they are wrong. Here is our evidence that we didn't do anything wrong. I haven't heard any of that. And I'm not saying it's not out there, but it sure is not getting any traction. And I got to guarantee that the Jennifer Carnahan has enough supporters that if that actually did exist, if those pieces of evidence to back up her claims that she didn't do anything wrong did exist, they would be pressing them all over social media. If I'm the Minnesota GOP, I look at her and say, no, you know, you serve at the pleasure of the GOP, and no, we're not going to give you a severance package. I just don't, I mean, the mentality of most Republicans is they think that their corporate executives wheeling and dealing. And the reality is that's, you are in the wrong industry if you are of the mindset that this is the place exists to basically give you, you know, large chunks of cash when you so desire. Well, I guess maybe not with the GOP. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. More to get to on that. Yeah, I'm just not quite sure where she thinks she's... we'll have to see. Let's go back to some other stories here. First of all, I wanted to bring up the fire it's not in the most... It's definitely not in the busiest day in place in the state as far as where this is. It's down by Isabella, and I've been through Isabella a few times. I think I got drunk in Isabella one time, but it's kind of a stretch of forest, kind of like I said, to the east of the Iron Range, west of the North Shore. It's fairly sparsely populated. I don't think there's a lot of people over in that area. I'm not saying there aren't some, and obviously all my best of the people that are there. Lightning is the cause of the Superior National Forest Greenwood fire, officials said on Thursday morning. The rural Lake County fire that began Sunday has grown to more than 6 square miles, expanding on its west side south of Stone Lake, according to a morning update. Hot temperatures and winds from the south are expected to make the fire move today as aircraft heavily equipped and structure protection crews work to keep the fire east of County Road 2. No new evacuations have been announced, but it could be coming. Forest Public Information Officer Joanna Gilkison said, working on the let's see here. Pardon me, I got to shuffle through my briefs here for a second. I love when I hit something on a computer and it goes to the other side of the page. There it is. Working on the fire today with 145 personnel with 25 engines and two dozers, 3 water tenders, 3 aircraft in addition to engines and equipped from the assisting partners. Officials from the Forest, Lake County, and the incident management team will hold a public meeting at 6 p.m. tonight to discuss closures, evacuations, and fire updates. It will be held at Wolf Ridge Environmental Learning Center Auditorium at 6282 Cranberry Lane in Finland, which is over by there, and streamed on Facebook. The Red Cross shelter, the Finland Community Center, remains open. The fire began Sunday about 50 miles southwest of Isabella, has yet led to evacuations of homes and cabins in several nearby areas, and closures of roads, campgrounds, and recreation sites. So far, no structures have been burned, though. Like I said, we're lucky that this isn't happens where we have a lot of people and a lot of cabins. Anywhere by Vermilion, it'd be a nightmare. And they're just as dry. I mean, but the Bemidji area, oof, they've had a real tough go of it. But, that's the latest update on that. Sven Sundgaard's supposed to join us, bring me the news. Hopefully he's going to join us here coming up in a little bit. We'll talk the weather with him and find out what his thoughts are on, you know, how dangerous it is. It sounds like the good news is we could expect a little bit of rain coming through, not only in the metro area, but as well in other areas as well. So that's the good news. The stories that are coming in, let's get to the coronavirus update for the day. We'll start actually on the national level because I got to tell you, some of the stories that you're seeing now, it is beyond comprehension. The one that's the heartbreaking one that's getting a lot of attention, when you look at the where DeSantis, you know, down in Florida, has been against face masks, been against, you know, kind of been against vaccines, has been basically. And if I can take a quick moment, there are people out there that keep screaming personal responsibility, and that's their argument. That this is personal responsibility, that people, we should trust people to do the right thing. There's a slight problem with that. You guys suck at showing any responsibility to anyone but your own person. Because the people that are screaming personal responsibility, they try to make it out to be like, everybody would wear a face mask. Everybody would be safe. No, it's just a bunch of selfish, greedy jackasses that basically don't want to have any kind of impact to their life and that don't think this is real because they've been brainwashed by stupid people, which makes them even dumber. And they sit there and they scream, personal responsibility. And that's their entire argument. That is their entire narrative. We are in a COVID surge that has been fueled almost exclusively by idiots screaming, personal responsibility. We've tried it your way. Your way sucks, morons. It does, because you're selfish, greedy, self-centered, arrogant jackasses that don't understand the benefit of the community by getting a damn shot and putting on a damn face mask. You're pathetic. You are pathetic. And that's all you really are. And I get it. You hear this and you say, see, owning the libs. Yeah, you know what my side is? Staying alive. You get sick. You're the one. First of all comes the whole thing. Don't tell anyone. I got COVID. Let me try to clear off my social media pages. Cough, 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 cough. Let me try to clear off all these things where I was against vaccines and face masks. Cough, 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 cough. Then you end up in the hospital. Then you end up on a ventilator. Then your family has to make that decision on whether or not they pull the frickin' plug. And then you have to decide, we have to find out whether you live or die. Meanwhile, you could end up dying and obviously horrible. And why I'm more concerned about your death than you are amazes me. But then you could live. And regardless, your family is saddled with hundreds, probably $100,000 worth of medical bills. Hope your insurance is okay. This clown car that was over there that was trying to threaten to blow up the building today, the Library of Congress today, one of his big things was about his health insurance. I said, well, why don't you get the Affordable Care Act? And that was the first thing I said. He was going through his litany of, you know, my wife's insurance got canceled. But with this thing cost us so much, we can't afford our health care. Why didn't you sign up for the Affordable Care Act, you fools? Oh, that's right. That was a Barack Obama policy. So even though it could have saved you and probably cut down on your medical expenses, you weren't ever going to do that because that was Barack Obama. I don't know what to do with you people. I don't know what to do with you people. But your personal responsibility argument is such a freaking fraud because you yourselves can't be personally responsible. We've tried it your way. Your way sucks. We got sick kids. We got dead kids. We got dead grandparents. We got dead, you know, regular people, parents, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds. It doesn't seem to matter with the Delta variant. For God's sakes, grow up, you immature imbeciles. Grow the hell up. I don't want you dead, I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. The same thing I've been screaming for the last year and a half. And you guys keep saying, well, I'll show you. Yeah, do it. Do it.
Oh, I didn't realize this was real. I didn't realize I was sick. What do you mean there's no ICU beds here? I got to go halfway across the state. I don't want to. I guess I should have gotten vaccinated.
I don't want you to be a freaking cautionary tale either, you fools. We've tried it your way. We had the news at the top of the hour. The redneck Riviera, they're trying to evacuate that now because things are so bad. 5,000 sick kids. 5,000 sick kids in the Tampa school district. 5,000. And the story I brought this up of the woman on the floor. It is just a disturbing image. Woman on the floor in a treatment center, just covered in a blanket on the floor, coughing, trying to get some kind of treatment because they don't have any place to put her in Florida. So she's on the floor of a treatment center. That's your personal responsibility. You selfish, greedy jackasses. Stop it. Stop it. I don't know. How am I more concerned about your life than you are?
Well, you shouldn't worry about that.
I don't want to. Trust me, I don't. But the problem with that is that even though you're willing to get sick, you seem to be willing to get as many other people sick as possible just out of spite. And for the record, nothing you people are doing is Christian. I know you guys on the right like to wrap yourself in your Christian Bible. Nothing you are doing is Christian. For God's sakes, wasn't that a major teaching of Jesus to give people health care, for God's sakes? Don't you think that means vaccines? Don't you think that means wearing a face mask if medical professionals are telling you to wear one? I read on Google for 5 minutes. That now makes me smarter than every doctor that ever graduated. I was reading up on Parler about something that made me not super smart because now I'm smarter than all doctors. Call me Dr. Smarty Pants. You guys are broken. You guys are freaking broken. And now your kids are getting sick. But I guess you're willing to sacrifice a few of those kiddos like they did back in the 1880s, where you have families that have 25 kids and three of them would make it to adulthood. Because if you can do that, guess what? You've owned the libs. It just costs you a few of your kids. Just a few of your kids. But you get to own the libs. Stupid. Can't help you guys. All right, when we come back, I'll actually get into the numbers for Minnesota coronavirus update when I do return. Just, and by the way, I'll post the picture of that woman that's on the floor. It's just heartbreaking, but that is Republican personal responsibility COVID treatment right there. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. The Minnesota coronavirus update for today, Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health. 1,355 new cases, 8 newly reported deaths, all of them occurring, all of them occurring in August here. Of course they did. The state's death toll is now 7,750 since the start of the pandemic. As of August 17th, the state reported that 3,264,937, an increase of 5,500 from Wednesday's report, have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,056,221 people have completed the vaccine series, 54.9% of Minnesota's total population. That's including kids under the age of 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine, have completed the vaccine series. That jumps to 65% when excluding that number of 12 and under. Through August 18th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 473. That's up to 1 reported on Wednesday. Of those hospitalized, 121 people were in intensive care, 352 were in general hospital care. The 1,355 positive results on Thursday update were from 27,658 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 4.90. According to John Hopkins, though, the positive rate over the last 7 days is 6.2, which has been rising as the Delta variant spreads. We are getting ready to start schools. As a matter of fact, some school districts, I believe, actually even start next week. It's weird. They're kind of supposed to start after Labor Day, but if you have an upcoming construction project, you can start earlier. So it depends. I'm not sure. And then some of the private schools can start. They have different calendars as well. The Bring Me the News actually has a very helpful website story here that gives you updates on what school districts have required masks. Burnsville, Egan, Savage, masks are required. These are the ones requiring masks. Masks are required there. Mask requirement applies to anyone 3 years of age or older. Regardless of vaccination status, exceptions or accommodations will be allowed, outlined by the Minnesota Department of Health. Columbia Heights Public Schools, in alignment with recommendations from the Minnesota Department of Health, beginning August 16th, they'll require universal indoor mask wearing at Dyna Public Schools. Masks are required. The plan includes universal indoor masking required for all people in the school, athletic and less activity, competing or practicing in activity settings, age 2 and older. Hopkins Public Schools, August 17th, the school board approved a safety plan that will require K-12 students and all staff, regardless of vaccination status, to wear face masks. Inver Grove Heights, starting August 23rd, face coverings will be required for everyone 3 and older inside ISD 199 buildings. Matamidi Public Schools, face coverings are required for all people, students, staff, and visitors while inside our school and district buildings, regardless of vaccination status. Minneapolis Public Schools, face coverings are required for all staff, students, and visitors over 2 years of age, regardless of individual vaccination status, in all Minneapolis public school buildings as of August 9th. Moundsview Public School will require all students, staff, and visitors wear masks while inside our building. North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, required for preschool students and older, regardless of vaccination status. Robbinsdale area schools, beginning Monday, August 23rd, face coverings will be required for all pre-K-12 students, the age of 2, and staff and visitors, regardless of vaccinations. Roseville area schools, August 17th, the school board of Roseville area schools adopted a resolution requiring all students, staff, and visitors to in early childhood programs through grade 12 and adult education to wear masks. St. Anthony New Brighton schools, starting Monday, August 9th, will require masks in any building. St. Louis Park, in accordance with policy 808 COVID-19 face coverings, masks will be required for all students, staff, and visitors indoors. St. Paul Public Schools, the Board of Education has voted to require face masks for all teachers, staff, and students and visitors 2 years of age and older. South St. Paul Public Schools, face coverings are required for all people age 2 and above inside all South St. Paul Public School buildings, including indoor athletic activity events beginning August 23rd. South Washington County Schools, face coverings are required for all people in all schools. West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Eagan Area Schools, universal indoor mask wearing for all students, staff, and visitors. White Bear Lake Area Schools, if transmission rates in Ramsey and Washington counties are substantial or high, face coverings will be required for all ages. That's good. And that's, I think, that's a good policy. They also have a list of districts that are not requiring masks, a.k.a. the soon-to-be super spreader events. And I have no problem calling them that. Don't you dare come back at me. Dear Lord, Eastern Carver County Schools, this is the quote, "At this time, we are not requiring face coverings. I know this community is divided over this issue of masks, and not everyone will be happy with the decision. I want to be clear that we'll continue to look at the data every week, and we see cases start to rise or outbreaks in the building. We'll revisit this decision." Guess what, Eastern Carver County? I'm going to use my powers of looking into the future. Let's see what I say. Oh, yeah, you're going to have face masks before too long because you're going to have a super spreader event there. Yar. But hey, but guess what? Some parents showed up and screamed really loud at a school board meeting. Well, I guess that's science now. I guess bloviated, red-faced, vein-popping morons who've read for 20 minutes on Google are now medical professionals. And if they can scream really loud, well, I guess we have a differing of opinion. You're a school, for God's sakes. Shouldn't science and education matter? I guess not. Farmington area schools. Face coverings are optional in district buildings, but guess what? They won't be optional in those emergency room beds. Forest Lake area schools. Current state guidelines recommend but do not require that masks be worn in schools. Our district plans to follow the same guidance at the start of the school year for recommended but not require masks, a.k.a. punt. New Prague area schools. Individuals who are fully vaccinated do not need to wear a mask while in school building. Individuals who are not fully vaccinated are encouraged. Oh, personal responsibility. Oh, good. That's going to go. Hey, look at Florida. You should have a map. You're in a school. You can point to it. Prior Lake Savage area schools, universal indoor masking is recommended. Personal responsibility. Randolph Public Schools, masks are encouraged but not required. Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan. As we have done throughout this pandemic, the district will continue to follow guidance from the state. We will not require anything not required by the state or regulatory agencies. Oh, guess what happens when you have a... Officer event there. Spring Lake Park schools, face masks are not required, but are recommended. Minnesota is recommending, not requiring, that everyone wears this. Now, you could show some leadership, but punt. St. Francis area schools, face coverings and masks will be optional for student staff. Keeping in mind, we need to be flexible. I don't know if the numbers start hitting you like they hit some of these school districts where, you know, a third of the teachers are out and, third of the students are out. Maybe we should have masks. Hey, what happened to all the personal responsibility stuff? Waconia Public Schools mask will continue to be recommended for students, teachers, but not who are not fully vaccinated. They'll be recommended. We're going to encourage them. Watertown Mayor Public Schools, if mandated by the state of Minnesota, mask will be required. Punt for Watertown Mayor. So, time to show leadership, and yeah. But let's just, for the record here, if I can say, if you have, for all of us keeping track, watch out for Eastern Carver County Schools, Farmington Area Schools, Forest Lake Area Schools, New Prague Area Schools, Prior Lake Savage Area Schools, Randolph Schools, Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan, Spring Lake Park Schools, St. Francis Area Schools, Waconia Schools, and Watertown Meyer Schools, because guess what? In 2 or 3 weeks, I get to tell you, told you so, and that will really piss you off. Be prepared. I will be. Because I'm wearing a mask, because I'm not an idiot. I'm going to wear a mask. I've been vaccinated. I'm going to be safe. And praise to the other school districts that are putting into place that their biggest concern is the health and safety of student and staff of their building, not making sure the howler monkeys that show up for your school board debates basically are appeased. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When we take a break, we'll take a break. Hopefully Sven Sundgaard joins us from Bring Me the News. When we do, we'll change a direction here and talk weather. Next up, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Trying to get in touch with Sven Sundgaard. He's up at the lake, man. Enjoying himself here. He's, of course, one of the hardest working men I've ever seen in my life. My gosh, the amount of stuff that he does. A very busy guy. So hopefully we'll get him here in the next few minutes and be able to talk with him about some of the weather stuff. Because it does sound like, indeed, there is going to be a chance at some rain coming on in. And that is definitely a good thing. That is definitely a good thing. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It does bring up a quick little point here that a story here I didn't know if I was going to have time for today. Minnesota added 14,500 jobs in July, largest monthly gain since March, according to data released today by the Minnesota Department of Economic Development. In addition, the state's unemployment rate declined by 1/10 of a percentage point to 3.9% last month. By comparison, the U.S. unemployment rate was 5.4% in July. The job gains were largest in leisure and hospitality, which added 7,700 jobs, followed by government with 5,800 jobs, manufacturing 2,700 jobs, construction 900 jobs. This is offset by losses in trade, transportation, and utilities, which declined by 2,600 jobs. It's always good to have a month where you have solid job gains, particularly in leisure and hospitality, which have been hit so hard. Well, they're finally starting to realize that they have to pay enough here. So that's the key, is that they're starting to finally realize they have to, make sure that these people that were out there putting signs on their business saying, no one wants to work anymore. No, they want to work. They just don't want to work for jerks. Can I be blunt about that? They just don't want to work for jerks, man. They don't want to work in a non-safe environment. They don't want to work in a place that's, definitely not going to pay them very much for dealing with a lot of upset customers or having to have to work a line possibly with some sick people. Yeah, it's a little bit, I can understand that. But one of the things that's been interesting is that a lot of these businesses have finally started to come around and say, okay, fine, we'll open up a little bit here. We'll start, offering more money, maybe some more benefits, or God forbid, if someone shows up for their job that day and they're sick, we'll allow them to go home and rest. So try giving them a call. Let's try to see if we can give them a call here again. All right. See if he's about. But no, that's good news. That's good news. They've covered about 64% of the 416,300 jobs that lost the first months of the pandemic last year. So, yeah, we're getting back. It's just it's going to be a long haul. It's going to be a long haul. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I want to make sure as well I touch on this story. We did mention this. You remember the story of the guy that sent his truck into the building? Yeah, that kind of tough. It seemed very racist at the time. And, you know, the folks up in the St. Cloud area were not taking this guy's threat seriously, if you ask me. I mean, the fact that this guy was able to get to the point where it was where he sent a truck barreling into someone's house. Yeah, I mean, someone is failing something there. Charges alleging racism as a motive have been added against a central Minnesota man accused of crashing an SUV into a multiracial family's home near St. Cloud because he suspected his girlfriend at the time was cheating on him with a black or biracial man. Benton Beyer, 32, of Richmond, now charged in Stearns County District Court with 11 counts, including assault with a dangerous weapon in connection to the unoccupied stolen SUV slamming into Andrea Robinson's house in Cold Spring on July 24th. The crash caused extensive damage into the house there. At the home, including the siding and potentially the roof, the house was occupied at the time with one child sleeping on the couch in the living room, which is near where the vehicle with a piece of granite on the accelerator hit the house. No one was physically hurt. Beyer was previously charged with a violation of a restraining order, property damage, and stalking and theft. Dozens of people, some Cold Spring residents and some advocates from central Minnesota and the Twin Cities, went before the city council soon after the home was damaged and demanded its members denounce racism and take meaningful action after the black family has been repeatedly the target of harassment. And that should be pointed out. Cold Spring here, there is a failure here. And I don't know if it's a, come on, man. Clearly the guy's a racist. We got a lot of people that kind of agree with that sort of thing around here. I don't know if that was it. I don't know if he's a racist and so am I. And I don't know if that was it. But, I mean, the belligerence and the stupidity, the intentional stupidity of Cold Spring to not look at a threat to their own citizens and do something harsher to defend these members of their community. I mean, you're lucky these people aren't dead. And we should make that point. The people of Cold Spring, the city council, should be lucky that these people that have had these consistent problems didn't have anyone die when this clown sent that car into that truck into their house. I mean, we see it. I mean, we've seen these stories where the car crashes into a building and all of a sudden, you know, it's a drive-through. You know, that where this truck hit was on the side of the house where apparently on the other side of that wall was a person sleeping. And yet, you know, it's a shame that Cold Spring had to get to this point where they took it seriously. Beyer was arrested that day, remains jail in lieu of a $100,000 bail, which, by the way, how is that only $100,000? This dude's bail should be somewhere in the million-dollar range. A message was left with his attorney Wednesday seeking a response to the additional charges. At the time of the assault, the defendant wrongly believed that his girlfriend had cheated on him with a black or biracial male associated with the victim's household, read the complaint, which made it clear that the Robinson family had no connection to the woman. The defendant was also so is this kind of racist logic that, you know, it looks like I was targeting them because they were black, but I think someone over there was sleeping, one of those black or biracial people was sleeping with my girlfriend, a white woman, so that's why I really attacked them. Oh, really? You're not really smart, are you? Because yeah, it's racist. Sounds pretty racist to me. But yeah, that's racist logic. That's what you're dealing with here. You're dealing with a person who is clearly a racist, and he's like, wait, whoa, this is not what it seems. So once again, the woman, they have no connection to this family. This is these are two people, and so even if this is his excuse, there is no validity to it at all. But the reality is that's not an excuse. He targeted them because they were black. The defendant also generally angry about her previously cheating on him with a black male. Well, so she cheated on you, and so you're just looking for any black person to take that out. Well, what happens when your racism just basically becomes, you know, kind of the validity for all your problems? And boy, is it. I hate to say this, but isn't that a larger problem that we have in this country today? Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it? Investigations revealed that the defendant targeted his household for the assault because this home contained individuals who were black or biracial. The charges also dispelled suspicions that a toy bear with a noose located on the stolen SUV was an indication of buyer sentiment towards the people of color. The vehicle's owner told investigators that has been with with them for years, so that wasn't a statement per se in regards to that. So, yeah, that's, you know, one of the things that I guess it got cleared up by. I would, you know, why do you have a bear with a noose on it in your car? Two of the 11 accounts against him alleged assault with a dangerous weapon, namely the stolen car. Descriptions accompanying the accounts say buyers acted because of the victim's actual or perceived race or color. The restraining order was issued in May. A recent investigation revealed 18 calls to authorities in recent months regarding buyer stalking and harassing Robinson, according to court documents. Buyer was also arrested on July 15th for violating the restraining order and then released 4 days later. How do you have a police department get that many calls from the authority, from this family about, and once again, this is since May. Since May, it sounds like. It sounds like, at least. In recent months, yes, since May, June, July, we're midway through August, for goodness sakes. 18 calls, it's basically a call a week. And this guy was then also arrested. How is it that you think that this is somehow solving itself? And Cold Spring, once again, you know, I get it. You guys don't like it when us in the metro area look at you guys and say, wow, sounds kind of racist up there. We had that with the racetrack down there. We had that with the guy up at the county fair with his generally take off with the Confederate flag. You know, the problem is this. If you guys keep doing this stuff, if you guys keep putting this stuff out here and having things like this, I mean, this is not as blatant as the racetrack announcer who basically, you know, was very racist there, or even kind of that pseudo-racism that we somehow accept in this country of the Confederate flag being flown as some sort of, you know, kind of, you know, just statement of neutrality. No, it's a racist flag. And don't tell me about the Dukes of Hazzard. Don't tell me about Roscoe P. Coltrane. It's a racist flag, and if you know any history of Minnesota, you shouldn't be flying that flag. We kicked the South's ass. Thank you very much. Go team, go. But this is more nefarious. This to me, what you see in Cold Spring is really exposing the trouble with the system. That in Cold Spring itself, you can have this many complaints. You can have this sort of thing And you can just see the city council kind of just, I don't know. I mean, do we really want to go on out there and really kind of go out there and stir up the bean pot over here? Because I'll tell you what, you know, there's a lot of people that might agree with this guy that's stalking them. And I don't want to necessarily come back here to a lot of people screaming at me because why are we stopping a good old white boy from doing what he wants? I don't know. I get the impression the fact is that this is the more disturbing of all the stories because this is just systemic, that you can have this kind of problem, that you can have a taxpayer in a community, a member of the community who, when the cameras are on there, we're all there for them. But when it comes down to either protecting these individuals and setting some standards, the city council just doesn't do their damn job, or the school district. I think the school district was also dropping the ball out there in regards to this case. Needless to say, it's. I'm glad we're finally getting some charges here. And the reality is that this guy is probably going to go away for a while. I mean, there's some serious charges here. But this should not be hard, heavy lifting for any community. Racism, bad. And if you have members of your community who are experiencing racism on this kind of intrusive, repetitive level, that the county sheriff, the local police, the city council, they all should be out there saying, what do you need from us? Because your lack of support for this family until this psychopath launched a truck into their house is pretty telling in its own nature. And yeah, we need to do better. So it's not looking like we're going to spend today. I don't think so. Sad. I was hoping to talk to him about weather, especially the South Carolina weather. But when we come on back, I got to talk to you about Governor Walz makes a good statement himself, and we'll get you up to date in regards to do we or don't we have any upbreaking news in regards to the Jennifer Carnahan saga. We'll update that. I'll check that out as we go here. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. All right, so I got the latest here on Carnahan. This is from Broadcorp here. I've heard from... Can I just sort of say this? This is just... Wow. I've heard from a few sources that the range of severance options discussed for Minnesota GOP Chair Carnahan was around 10 months of salary and benefits. Sources indicated the situation was fluid and subject to changes. Why are you guys paying her anything? Why are you guys paying her anything? The Star Tribune? The Star Tribune, for God's sakes! Not exactly the most liberal rag out there. I know you guys was the Red Star. God, you guys, I get it. You shame the Star Tribune into becoming a conservative paper. I get it. That was what, because you couldn't stand the truth being reported on the right. I get that. But this newspaper is nowhere near a liberal rag, for God's sakes. And even they are saying, this is from the Star Tribune from less than an hour ago. Jennifer Carnahan wants you to remember the real victim here. Jennifer Carnahan. Dear Lord. But this is the breaking news. This is only 2 minutes ago. In the last 90 minutes, Minnesota GOP Jennifer Carnahan was served notice of an emergency Minnesota GOP State Central Committee meeting on August 30th at the Sovereign Estate Winery in Waconia. Hey, good publicity if you can get it. If Carnahan resigns tonight, the meeting will be delayed 45 days. Stay tuned for updates. I don't know if she's going to make it to the meeting. Will she make it to the meeting? If she resigns tonight, okay, resign. The problem is if she does resign, it's kind of one of those things where she's going to, that would be, you know, taking kind of blame. And I don't think that's really something she wants to do at this point. Okay, let me see if I can find, where is Channel 9, Theo Keith. Let's see what he has to say. He's been pretty good on this stuff. He only has that update from 4 hours ago. So, yeah, Broadcorp is the latest one. He's got the latest update on this. So, once again, let me read that to you again here from Michael Broadcorp. In the last 90 minutes, Minnesota GOP chair was served notice of an emergency Minnesota GOP State Central Committee meeting on August 30th at Sovereign Estate Winery in Waconia. God, does that sound white. If... It does. It does. You know, I'm just saying, yeah. If Carnahan resigns tonight, the meeting will be delayed 45 days. Stay tuned for updates. We'll have to find out about that. There you go. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. One last story for you today. Involves Joe Biden received a letter from Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan on Monday. Minnesota stands ready to welcome refugee families from Afghanistan. You may already be aware that in the past, Minnesota stepped forward to help those who are fleeing desperate situations and need a safe place to call home. The letter reads, "New Minnesotans strengthen our community and contribute to the social fabric of our state. They are our neighbors. Afghans are fleeing their home country and seeking refuge after a governmental collapse and Taliban takeover of the country weeks before the United States planned its withdrawal of troops." And by the way, if you hadn't heard the Stein interview, Stein and I think we pegged it. The problem was Our intelligence agencies were only looking at the Taliban. They weren't looking at what we should have been looking at, the resiliency of the Afghan military. Now, granted, once again, I'll be the first to say, Trump himself, when he decided to negotiate directly with the Taliban. Think about that. Donald Trump, the president of the United States, was negotiating with the Taliban without the government of Afghanistan present. And then went and told them, not only here's what we're going to do, but then ordered the government of Afghanistan to release thousands of Taliban prisoners, many of whom are attacking us right now. Well done, idiot. Wow. But the reality is that it became clear, and as we said on the show, 2,448 Americans died in Afghanistan over the last 20 years. We've sacrificed enough. And if the local people are not willing to try to sacrifice for their what they believe in, well, should we be there anymore? I don't think we should. But the one thing I'm glad about here is there have been, for the last 20 years, plenty of Afghanis who have been there helping us. And we're not talking about, okay, they worked in some fort for 3 weeks. No, we have people that have worked with the United States government for a decade plus and will be killed. They will be killed by the Taliban if they are left behind. Taliban, you shouldn't trust the Taliban. I have no idea why Trump ever did. That was one of the dumbest things he could have ever done. But he did. He trusted them. You should never trust the Taliban. So here's the deal. Bring them here. If they are willing to work with us, they are willing to help push the American cause, then for God's sakes, bring them to Minnesota. Let's streamline the process. Let's get the paperwork done. I live in a city that's robust and vibrant. I live in a city that not only has its traditional Scandinavian kind of feel, but as well as is made better by the stories and cultures of so many people, including the Native Americans who were here before us. The Hmong, the Somali, the Latino, the African-American. It's a vibrant state. And trust me, can I just make this plea? Bring them on in here, because in 10 years we'll have some of those, we'll have great Afghan restaurants in town. And, you know, I love that part of it. They come here, they're part of the community. Yes! That's America. That's America. And I love it. I love this town, and this town will be made better by people like interpreters who have been working, knowing that the Taliban took over, that they would be killed, working because they believed in what America stood for, at least in Afghanistan. Well, let's show them that they weren't wrong and bring them here, bring them and their families here, and make this country better by making it more inclusive. That's a good thing. And if you hear what I said and you feel threatened, go away. Just seriously, go away. Seriously, just go away. Native Roots Radio, that's coming up next. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.